I feel like all this momentum is built up. You know, like, how do we get students involved? And this is my favorite thing to talk about, so I'm really excited to be here. So I'm going to talk a little bit today about the pipeline. How do we ensure that in 20 years, we have amazing global health advocates who have the skills and the passion and the network to really tackle the challenges of 21st century health? And as we know, it's changing. So we're going to have double burden of disease. We're going to be connected around the world. How do we actually equip young people to tackle this challenge? The other thing I wanted to say is that to touch on two different pieces that have come up. So one piece about talking about young people, when I say young people, I'm thinking about millennials, so people between the ages of 18 and 29, which I fall in. And there's two pieces here. The first is thinking about the pipeline of leadership, so who are going to be the global health advocates of the future. But the second piece is those huge words, public. 50% of the U.S. population is under 30. And in countries around the world, especially in the developing world, that number is even higher. So when you're talking about the public, you really are talking about a certain demographic. And so when you're trying to mobilize them, it has to be geared towards that particular perspective. So I'm going to talk a little bit about my own journey in being a global health advocate, because I think it's indicative of what's happening on college campuses and across kind of young people today. Talk about a few forces that I see shaping millennial advocacy and some emerging trends. Some thoughts on how to prepare the next generation and what you particularly can do to help build this pipeline. So my journey as a global health advocate got started at Barnard College. I founded GlobeMed at Columbia University, and in GlobeMed's model, each chapter supports the work of one grassroots health organization founded by a grassroots leader like Pam Onguesh, who is in the picture with me. She's a northern Ugandan human rights activist. And you get connected to a grassroots organization, and basically they become your mentor. So the way you work together is you talk frequently. So I was talking with Pam Onguesh, this northern Ugandan human rights activist, at least once every 2 weeks on Skype, on emails. When we say it's a connected world, it's really true. Our students are talking to grassroots leaders all over the world. You're working together to design a project that really supports the grassroots activist work. So Pam is dedicated to mobilizing for health and human rights for the people of northern Uganda. And as a student, my question to her was, how can I help you do that better? I'm sitting at Columbia University, one of the most resource-rich places in the world, and I know that there's something that I can do to help you achieve the vision of health for your community. So we worked together to design a project. We got it all down in an MOU with a project plan and a budget. It was focused on income generation through livestock, since goats are this really wonderful resource for northern Ugandans. And then I got to work on my campus, mobilizing my peers to raise money. We raised about $10,000. And meanwhile, we were going through a year-long global health and social justice curriculum that was coming down from the GlobeMed National Office. And what that allowed me to do is really understand what I was working on in this one community in the broader scope of global health. So how does this fit in with broader trends of conflict and peace and reconciliation, HIV, etc.? And how did we fit into past social movements like the civil rights movement and the AIDS movement? What if Gandhi had Twitter talking about things like this? So we were able to then send those resources over to northern Uganda. Pam got the project started. And then a group of us, 3 to 5 every summer, actually traveled to the partner organizations on the ground to see our projects already running. I got to talk to every single one of the families in this program and really understand what was working about the project, what was not working about the project. But a few other really key things happened in this experience. So the first is that through the GlobeMed model, students learn that there are people everywhere, in every corner of the world, from rural Nepal to inner city, you know, Lima, Peru, who care about global health issues, who believe in global health equity, and are working to do something about it, which makes you feel like you're not alone. The second piece is that we can work together. There are ways in which we can combine efforts to make tangible change in communities. But lastly, and this is really where the global health advocacy piece comes in, you start to realize that whatever you want to achieve in these partner communities that you become so deeply tied to has to also engage with bigger systems. One of our mentors called it being able to speak the language of power and the language of love. And so through this experience, our GlobeMed alumni are popping out the other side, really saying, we're so deeply committed to health equity. There's this growing trend and passion for global health on college campuses, but how can we actually not only improve the health of these partner communities through these projects that we're doing, but also by engaging in global health advocacy? So when I graduated from Barnard College, I was totally in love with GlobeMed and the experience that I'd had, joined the national office. which is based out of Northwestern, where we had our first chapter, became executive director and started to grow this network so that we could really have a critical mass of students going through the experience that I did, being able to understand community health issues on the ground, but also have a passion for changing structures. So today we're at 55 university chapters across the U.S., and I'm thrilled to have Brianna here, who's the chapter founder at Spelman College.
Yay.
Working each one with one grassroots organization. So we're working with 55 different grassroots groups across 19 countries. And we've got about 1,000 alumni who are working in all different fields, including Rachel Berkowitz, who's in the back.
Hi, Rach.
Really advancing global health across different fields. So we started to step back and take a look at how could this network really engage in advocacy, thinking about the next 3 years of GlobeMed. And as we were doing that, we did a ton of research about our own generation, which is kind of funny, like hearing what people say about you, and looking at kind of our patterns of advocacy and engagement, and then looking at, what are the trends in the ways that millennials are getting involved in advocacy. So I want to share with you kind of 5 key insights that we have, forces shaping millennial advocacy, and then some of the key ways in which my generation is getting involved. And so these are both challenges and opportunities. So the first one is that, as I'm sure you've heard, our generation is very skeptical about government. So these are stats from a recent Harvard study of young Americans where only 25% of our generation sees themselves as politically engaged, which is actually in stark contrast to the numbers of students who are deeply passionate about global health. They're not aligning somehow. So there's a gap there. Secondly, nearly 50% of people between 18 and 29 believe that politics are just not the answer. So how are we engaging people in advocacy when they're just saying Washington is broken? Why would we even engage in the first place? And lastly, only 6% of college students are even thinking about working in government. So it's not on their radar as much. And when you're a college student today, you're not thinking, government is the way I can go make change. You're thinking about the Gates Foundation and Clinton and maybe starting your own initiative. So there's a major, major gap here. The second is that there's been definitely a perceived and true major rise in the private sector in terms of their engagement in global health. And again, young people are seeing this. They don't know these numbers, but when they think about global health, right now they're not thinking about USAID as much. They're thinking about Gates and Clinton. They're thinking about the role of markets. They're watching Ashoka and Acumen Fund and Echoing Green and all these market-based kind of initiatives, and they're thinking, that's the way I need to go. And I think there's a major knowledge gap in the fact that the U.S. government is still this major player in global health, and that funding the Global Fund is essential for anything we want to accomplish in our partner communities. So there's a major gap there. Secondly, is that they're not thinking again about government as the source of power because they hold it in their hands. I can connect to activists around the world. I can video Skype with Pam on my phone walking down the street now. I mean, it's absolutely amazing what we can do with technology. And as if you've tried to have conversations with your children recently, you'll know that young people spend about 7 hours of their time online. So this is, and that's actually a fact, which is crazy. 7 hours staring at a screen. So it's so true that technology is both the way that they perceive themselves to be empowered, but also the major medium to reach them. Talking to them is incredibly difficult. Sending them a tweet, they're more likely to get that. It's taking 7 hours of their time. But the other, I think, really fascinating thing is that there's growing research that the young people who are feel themselves to be most technologically savvy are also those that are most optimistic about being able to make global change. So there's a recent Telefonica survey of millennials that basically showed that the 11% of millennials who feel that they're most tech savvy are also the most optimistic about being able to make a global impact. And I think that there's a real insight there, because when you see that you can connect with people around the world and really mobilize networks, you suddenly feel like you're not alone. So technology is this absolutely critical piece in engaging millennials. Next, it's been touched on, but we're the generation who has heard, be the change, be the change, be the change. Thank you, Gandhi. It's turned into a marketing slogan for every single action. And so we've really taken that to heart. And I think there's some really good things about this and some really negative things about this. But as a young person, thinking about engaging in protracted budget negotiations, versus starting your own really innovative and awesome social enterprise. Like, there's an immediate gratification piece there, you know? And so what we have to, I think, help young people see is that they need to be the change inside the box and outside the box. We need to welcome them into our organizations and make sure that they know that they can push forward these, you know, much more protracted challenges, as well as start to kind of innovate outside. And lastly, you know, and I think this is tied to everything else that I said, there's an increasing identity as a global citizen rather than just an American. And what that means, so this is Facebook's friendship map. It shows friendships all over the world. And so on Facebook, I'm connected to almost every single one of our partner organizations, students around the world. My identity is much more in a global context than it is in just a national one. And so when I think about global health and global engagement, I'm thinking abroad. You know, I'm not necessarily thinking about voting. Like, the idea that voting is a global health action is not, the dots aren't totally connected there. And so I think that being able to actually go back to the true meaning of global health, which is the local is as connected to the international, is going to be incredibly important for speaking to this generation. So recognizing all of these trends, you know, it's been fascinating to ask, A, how do we engage the other 75% of millennials who aren't engaged in advocacy right now? And B, what are people doing? And can that give us some insight to the first question? So I want to talk about next three emerging trends in millennial advocacy. And I'm pulling here from three different GloMed alums who have taken their experience to the advocacy sphere in their years after GloMed. So the first is that we're seeing that GloMed alums are creating new communities of purpose. So our former executive director, John Schaefer, has joined the organization Partners in Health, so stepped into an existing organization and said, we're going to create this grassroots movement. And in a time when advocacy organizations are struggling, Partners in Health's grassroots movement is growing. Why is this? The first is because they lead with the why. They put the idea of the right to health out front and center, and that attracts millennials because we're all about the why. But secondly, it's a place of innovation and a place where their voice can be really heard. So creating communities of purpose. Secondly, they're creating new technologies. So this is Broad Street Maps is an initiative that was started by two GloMed at Middlebury alums who were geography majors at Middlebury. And during their time with their partner organization, they designed a geographic information system that was able to map the data of their partner organization, turn that into a map that they were then able to go to the Rwandan government for and advocate around malnutrition by mapping the malnutrition hotspots. They've since turned that into a social enterprise where they're working with many of our other partner organizations to do the same. So rather than actually going to the Rwandan Ministry of Health, they said, let's be able to represent this information with technology, share it online, and build a movement around that. So they're designing new technologies. And then lastly, and this is where the What If Gandhi Had Twitter piece is so fascinating to me, there's new combinations of offline and online action that are being experimented with. So two of our alums have started an initiative called Article 25, which is combining community organizing of TB patients in India with an online advocacy component. So again, it's the idea of what if Gandhi was able to mobilize these massive community demonstrations, but then tie them to all of the resources of online advocacy petitions, social media, Twitter, et cetera, to be able to bring it out to a much broader audience to say, yes, I stand with you. So this summer, they were able to organize the first demonstration of TB patients in India, backed by an international set of petitions, and the people who were telling the stories were the TB patients themselves. So again, I think there's so many new opportunities for combining this idea of communities of purpose with new technologies. Okay. So really quickly, some thoughts on preparing the next generation to both get engaged, how do we engage that 75%, and then how do we allow them to step into some of these emerging trends. So we think about it in terms of three different levels. The first is that we have to educate students, particularly by linking values to systems. So we're hearing this overwhelming cry from young people that they believe that health is a human right and they want to get engaged. That's not connecting to them to how they actually push systems of government and systems systems of power to achieve that. And we do that, again, through our community partnerships, where people like Pam are telling me about, you know, the ways in which USAID's HIV policies affect her programs, through a peer-driven curriculum in which students are able to explore issues of global health together and discern these pieces. And lastly, our national events, where we put students with thought leaders who can help connect the dots for them. The second is to inspire by countering skepticism with experience. We need to give young people the experience of being powerful and the experience of making change so that they know that change is possible. Again, we do this through our partnerships with community organizations and through our global network. And then lastly, I'm so thrilled to hear that JHC is thinking about an emerging leaders program, because I think this is really key. If we don't get people launched into careers in advocacy now, we're going to have a drought on the other side of the pipeline. And so how can we really support these emerging leaders who are coming out with new ideas and new passion? So lastly, what can you do? So the first thing is, I was so excited to hear about membership, about the $25 student fee, and really the openness to welcoming millennial voices to the table. This does not mean that you need to give millennials the wheel, which sometimes it's what it sounds like. It really is that we want to be heard and that we want to know that we have a genuine role to play, you know, rather than just being invited to kind of listen. We also want to do some talking, and I think we have some things to share. Second, to experiment and innovate with us. Again, give us the space to kind of figure out how to navigate this new landscape. It's different for all of us. And as we said, 50% of the public is us. So we're trying to figure out how to talk to ourselves as well. And then lastly, 1, 1, and 2. So do all of these things. Definitely, if you're not already mentoring an emerging millennial leader, if it's someone on your team, if it's someone in your family, just the act of really saying to someone, you have a role to play and you can make this difference, is so empowering. And that's been true for me over and over again. It's the reason why I'm excited to spend my life working on protracted budget negotiations, because people have said to me that we can make a difference and you're not alone. So lastly, just want to share this quote. It's one of my favorites. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. So let's plant the trees that we need for the future, and be in touch if you want to talk more about how to engage the millennial generation, because there's so much passion and potential there. Thank you.